Hello, and welcome to the Podcast of Steel. Here, I share news, reviews, my adventures, interviews, and more. You can always expect some Superman content from this show, but I'm a lover of all things geeky, so you never know what you're going to get. Now, let's leap into action with a brand new episode of the Podcast of Steel.
Welcome back to the Podcast of Steel. I am your host, Luke Bug, the Geek of Steel. I have a very special guest on this episode, somebody that has made emotional, powerful music for films, video games, documentaries, has worked with NASA. The list goes on and on, but Ilyan Eshkeri, welcome to the podcast, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so grateful for your time. I know you're a very busy man. I've been doing my research and you're always doing something, which is wonderful. But to be able to speak with you today about your music and your craft and, of course, Superman, the Christopher Reeve story, is an absolute honor. So thank you for your time, sir. How are you?
Yeah, great. Getting used to the wintry, darker evenings now, but all is well.
Yeah, they come around quick. Once those hours change, it's pretty much you blink and it's already nighttime, which is it makes it more wintry and cozy, but it's never the best for when you're sort of waking up trying to get things done. Where do I begin asking questions for you, sir? That's the question. You probably had these questions asked you so many times over the years. I'm a fan of your interviews and your interview style, but if you could share your origin story, as it were, with the listeners and watchers, where did it all begin for you, sir?
Well, how far back to go? I mean, I grew up playing violin and I got a guitar for my 13th birthday, and I thought that I wanted to work in, well, I wanted to be a guitarist in a rock and roll band, because who doesn't?
Yes.
But I got the opportunity to assist a composer. At the time, I also went to university. I went to Leeds University, where I studied literature and music. And it was, you know, people always ask because they want to know how to get into the industry. It was very different. It was much more niche back then. So I think it was in many ways easier. But you know, bit by bit, I worked for people. I did short films. I played in bands. I just did every single thing that I possibly could. And bit by bit, you know, just by persevering, I started to get some jobs. And I suppose the big break for me was Layer Cake, which is celebrating 20 years.
Crikey.
Just last month.
Yes.
Makes me feel very old indeed, although I did it when I was very young. So
we can have that. So what was that like sort of for you? You know, you've got a film under your belt. What was it like to be a part of that process?
It was a bit crazy, because they were working, there's a lot of songs in the film, but they were working with Lisa Gerrard from The Dead Can Dance, and she provided these vocal elements, but they realized that they needed some more traditional score. By say traditional, I mean it was quite sort of guitar-y and electronic, as well as strings and brass. And they had 2 weeks to go. So from meeting Matt Vaughan to being in Abbey Road Studios and recording the score was 2 weeks. And that was completely crazy, but a brilliant ride. And then, you know, the movie was successful, and it was really my break. You know, it was really something.
So before we get into sort of all the movies and games and documentaries you helped create, you talked about the fact that you wanted to be, you know, a rock and roll star. Did you ever get that moment on stage of, you know, not necessarily violin or you're composing music, but you had that rock star moment? Did you have that?
You know what? I have this show. You mentioned that I worked with NASA. I have a show. Yes. I created with the European Space Agency and NASA, and it came about because Tim Peake, the British astronaut, was a fan of my music, and I went to visit him in Houston, and it came up with this mad plan to create this show, which is about the emotional journey that astronauts go on. You know, the astronauts are all scientists of one sort or another, you know, whether they're engineers or doctors or pilots. You know, they're very science-based. They're not always that great about talking, describing the emotional journey. But they shoot all this incredible footage aboard the International Space Station. And I thought if I could take the footage that they saw, so you're seeing it through their eyes, and I wrote an album and I made the film, the footage fit my music, you know, like a big giant music video, then maybe I could take an audience on a journey similar to, you know, an emotional journey that reflected the experience of the astronauts. And so that's what I did. And we performed that, you know, various places around the world. But I did a performance at the Albert Hall in London. And I have a Gibson Flying V
Oh,
from the 80s,
nice.
like one of the, not the original 50s one, but the original reissue of that. And of course, that was inspired by the space race, that guitar, and so it was the appropriate one. And during the rocket launch sequence, I have like a rock and roll flying V. So that's my moment where I get to finally live out my rock and roll dreams in the show. And I did
That's
that
not,
at the Albert Hall.
yeah, not. When venues, isn't it's not a bad one. It's quite a cozy little hall, that one, to have a rock and roll moment in.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's definitely a bucket list, isn't
Of
it?
course. I mean, I a few years ago, I got to see Superman 78 there, conducted by Anthony Gabrielli, and it was my first time visiting the Royal Albert Hall, and it was my first time seeing Superman the movie, and it was conducted with a live orchestra. And I've never been able to listen to the soundtrack sort of the same way. It hits me in a different way. So I can't imagine what it was like for you to be on that stage, hearing and performing your music. It's a very, very big bucket list moment. We will talk about the amazing Superman Christopher Reeve story soundtrack shortly. But yeah, you've had a wonderful career. No signs of slowing down, which is fantastic. Are you, when it comes to enjoying music in your downtime, how does that work for such a gifted composer?
Well, you know, music is part of life, right? We listen to it all the time, and so, you know, I enjoy music the same as anyone else does. You know, I'm able to switch off that analytical part of my brain and just listen to music. And so, you know, I find random things or get told about random things. At the moment, I'm quite into this lo-fi Japanese instrumental hip hop. It's quite a niche area. There's not that many artists, but it's pretty cool stuff. So I've been listening to a lot of that. And I'm also, my daughter is, of course, really into Taylor Swift and ABBA. So
Wow, that's a good mix.
I probably listened to more of that than anything else. So I bought a record player to put in the kitchen dining room, and that's really good fun because now she's 9 and she just puts on vinyl and we listen to whole albums, and that's a great experience. I'm trying to encourage her towards David Bowie
Just work
and
it in.
more music that I like,
You'll
but.
get there. I think that's the thing about I've got two nieces. One's just turned 17, and the other one's just they're both getting into music now, as it were. And I could be listening to something, and they'd be like, "Uncle Luke, how do you know Faith No More? How do you know about this band?" I was like, "Well, these bands have been around for quite some time. You aren't the first person to find them," sort of thing. But it's great when you can introduce them to new music. And yeah, and I've been enjoying what Taylor Swift's been doing. I mean, I admire that stage presence that one can have to perform songs around the world in that way, much like your Royal Albert Hall rock and roll star moments.
Well, I mean, yes, I mean, I never expected to be compared to Taylor Swift. That's a very big compliment. But it's I think she's amazing. I mean, I hadn't really listened to her music in any kind of detailed way. I don't think I'm really her target audience, But now, of course, I listen to it lots, and it is brilliantly crafted music. She's a great songwriter and an amazing personality, and I think a great role model. So I'm definitely a fan. I'm a Swiftie.
Good, that's it. It's a good band to be in, I think.
There you
Now,
go. That's your exclusive.
that's it. I'll have that. Big flashing letters. It's a first. He's a Swifty. Looking through your musical repertoire and some of the stuff that you have created over the years, I like connecting the red string, as it were. And being a Superman fan, I like noticing similarities or reference points where Superman has been in your work. Now, of course, we've got this Superman documentary, which is amazing. But you also helped create some music for a film called Collide a few years ago with Nicholas Hoult.
Correct.
Now, Nicholas Hoult, soon to be next year, will be the new Lex Luthor. So that's one
Correct.
link. So I'm liking
Yeah.
that. There's all these little red string moments, and also Stardust. Now, fantastic book, fantastic film, fantastic music. Henry
Thank you.
Cavill, the Man of Steel Superman, also appeared in Star very briefly. He was a bit of a bad guy, but he was in that film as well. So thank you for helping to put your work into the Superman tapestry for me, as it were, as I like noticing the little stitches over time. For you, it's probably a question that you've been asked a lot over the years. What scores have inspired you? What movie or documentary soundtracks have really hit home for you?
Well, I'm an 80s kid, so of course I grew up with the obvious great scores that people love: Star Wars, Superman, Back to the Future. There's a long list. E.T. and I guess John Williams featuring heavily there, but
Yes.
he certainly was at the height of his powers at that moment in time. These were the soundtracks to our lives, I can remember running around in the playground singing the Superman tune to myself, pretending I could fly. It was, so it was for all of us, right? There weren't as many, well, there weren't any superhero movies really, and there wasn't as much film and television being made as there is now, so we had all very similar cultural touch points, I think. And so those things were a huge influence for me, and I remember listening to those scores. I had some of them on vinyl, and feeling like that was the new classical music, because I, my mother's a classical pianist, not professionally, but she still plays a lot, and we always had classical music on in the house, and so I was really interested in what this new sound was. But then, as I got older and I studied more, I'm fascinated by the origins of King Kong's really the first score, the first film to have a score on it. Max Steiner has written many of my favorite scores, Gone with the Wind, Casablanca. But I think that King Kong score is remarkable, and already holds so much of the pillars of how we still write film score. And I love this one thing about it. You have the overture, of course, but the movie starts and there's no score at all. And then they leave New York and they're trying to find Skull Island, and they get lost in the mist. And as they get lost in the mist, this is the beginning of the world of the fantasy. And that's where the first cue in film history begins, is as they leave the real world and enter the fantasy world.
Ooh.
And I just think, that Matt, well, who knows whether it was Max Steiner's idea or the director's idea, but it's just a wonderful, wonderful moment.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that again. I'm going to dig out the Blu-rays to sort of. I love the original King Kong. I love the remakes that have happened over the years. But there was something as a kid that monster, that giant ape climbing up the tower, it did fill my dreams for a while as a child. And I can remember the first time going to New York in, I think, 99, thinking, it's a big building. He was a big ape. But so please, if we can, let's talk a little bit, or I could talk to you for hours about Superman, the Christopher Reeve story, and the power that you have created with it, but also the responsibility that was on your shoulders that you have surpassed and made such a powerful and emotional soundtrack. How did you feel when you got the news that you would be making this music?
You know, for me, projects, I choose the projects I work on based on the people that I'm going to be working with. At this point in my career, that's really the number one thing for me. Am I going to have a positive creative collaboration with these filmmakers? And I'd worked with Peter and Ian before, so the answer to that was yes. I know that they're brilliant at what I do. So whatever they were making, I was really up for it. Then the second question for me is, well, can I contribute? What can I contribute to it? And I should just say about that first thing is that I do think that being, you know, working in as a media composer, which is, you know, part of what I do, not all of what I do, but working as a media composer, there are those jobs that you can be hired for, and I get asked to do them as well, where people just want to point at something and say, I need that. Can you do something like that? And it's very, what you're doing is very commercial and not very creative. And that's fine. That's great, but it's just not what I like to do. What I like to do is I like to get in the room with the filmmakers, and we very much made this documentary together. You know, there were things that weren't working, that music helped to work. There were things that we talked about that had nothing to do with music. You know, we're just a team of people trying to mold this thing into some shape. And my job is to tell the emotional narrative of the story. But it's not, you know, I don't think of my job as making music. I think of it as I'm a storyteller, but my part of the storytelling is to tell the emotional journey. And that's a collaborative process.
And you certainly did that very well. I've been speaking with people around the world that have gotten to see this film. Now, the UK, we got it a little bit later, but I was patient and I was waiting for this film to come out. As soon as I found out about the documentary and the people behind it, I was so curious. Now, I've read Christopher Reeve's autobiographies. I've watched his documentaries. I knew all the wonderful and the funny and the sad facts about Christopher's life, but this film with your music, it was like I was being told this tale in a new way. And yes, as you said, if you were there, if your job is to create emotional music, you did that very well. You can give yourself a huge pat on the back, because I certainly was in a theater filled with very emotional people after watching this film and enjoying it and going on this journey. It truly is an experience, this film, and I'm hearing nothing but good things. Award season is upon us soon, and I hope this film and your music gets more recognition. What was it like for you to have your music completed and to sit down with the wonderful Peter and Ian and share them? I know it was a process where you made the music as you went, but showing it to Peter and Ian and sorry, and audiences, what was it like for you for that?
Well, you know, the process is always ongoing. You know, I wrote a theme first of all that we decided wasn't the right idea. Then we had another approach, you know, and for me that process is always ongoing. And in fact, you know, what people sometimes ask me, oh, you know, what's the thing that you've done that's your favorite work or that you're most proud of? And I find that question impossible to answer because I don't like the finished product. I like the process of making it. And I would just continue to work on it if I didn't have to hand it in. And in actual fact, when I was making the album and I was unhappy with the mix of the titles. And then when DC Warner Brothers bought the film, they had to go back into the dubbing theater to put the new DC logo on the front. Of course, there was an enormous amount of secrecy about that
Yes, I think
because
it's the brand.
nobody had seen it because we're the first
And I
DC film.
yes, which is what, and I was, yeah, it was a fantastic logo to see on that first film as well.
Well, and so, it makes me very proud to, be, coming straight after that. But I took that opportunity. I rang our producer, and I was like, can I please just swap the title music? But because I just want to fix this one thing, which is what I really should not have been doing. But because we were done and dusted, we'd screened it at Sundance. They'd bought the film, so I probably shouldn't even be saying this. But the reason I'm saying it is, for me, the process is never over. And when we made the film, now it's like this big thing, and James Gunn is behind it and loves it, and there's the whole DC thing, and the fans, the comic book fans are incredibly kind and supportive, and I'm amazed at how into it they all are. When we were making it, it was funded by two small independent documentary companies in the UK. It's a British independent low budget film. That's what we made. It has this feeling now with DC behind it of being this big Hollywood thing, but it absolutely was not. And I had to pull every favor and pull every string I could to make that score sound the way that it sounds. It was done on a shoestring budget. And when we had the London premiere at the BFI IMAX, biggest screen in the UK, one of the biggest screens in the world, where they premiered, Christopher Nolan's movies and like God knows what else, right? I was actually pretty nervous walking into that theater because I just thought, I didn't make this score to be played in a theater of this size. And I was a little nervous about it, but actually translated well and it sounded great. So I was really relieved at the end.
I'm glad to have your work projected on that massive screen and the huge speakers at the BFI as well. So yeah, a bit of a pressure stressful moment, but you got through it, and to wonderful reviews as well. Not just for this fantastic film, but for that music as well. Now, I'd heard some of the score on the trailers for the documentary. I didn't want to watch too many of the trailers because I didn't want too much spoil, but I got glimpses of your music, and I didn't want to listen to the soundtrack in full until I'd watched the film for the first time. And it's still powerful each time I hit play. When I was preparing for this podcast, when I was going for a walk last week, it's got all the emotions in there. It's got everything from that first track. Also, though, what I did like, I've got it written down. Yes, 1973. I think it's the second track, the disco track. If you need help getting out of bed in the morning, that is the track you need to put on because that just changes your whole mood. But it really puts you in that time zone. It puts you in this, like, the funky 70s. And it was, as you said, your music is storytelling and it's emotion. And that is what I got from each of these tracks. It's like
It's
picking.
interesting that you mentioned that track. It was because normally with scene setting music like that, which is not, that music isn't about emotional narrative. That music is about setting the time period and the location of New York 1973. And so my first reaction to that was, you need to pick a source track. But Ian and Peter, the directors, were adamant that it needed to be score, that we wanted to keep the cohesion of the score all the way through, and that the only licensed music would be John Williams. And that was quite a challenge. So I took it. It uses the harmonic, the chords, and the harmonic structure of the theme. And then I put this 70s thing onto it. And then you have the problem of how do you make something like that authentic? And so for me, that's always about, well, you've got to find a musician who does that stuff. And I have a great friend called Tim Carter, who's the guitarist in Kasabian. But he's actually originally is a drummer, and he's just a brilliant all round, in fact, slightly annoying how brilliant he is at every single instrument he touches. And he's also a great record producer. And so I sort of cobbled it together, and then I gave it to him, and he played the guitars and played the drums on it. So it's all live and it's all real. And then I just did that 70s string arrangement on it, which is just brilliant fun when you get to do stuff like that.
And it really worked. And I mean, the whole soundtrack is powerful. Did you have any input with titling the tracks?
Oh yeah, of course. Yes,
I love
absolutely.
that, because even those are powerful. And there's little hints to references to moments in Christopher's life, and even some of the chapters in his autobiographies. And
No,
they all.
I'm really happy you noticed that, because I put a lot of time and thought and effort into titling the tracks. Because and also I don't know if you noticed, but the album is arranged in a linear. As a linear story, whereas the film isn't. And that took a lot of thought as well, because the music didn't work. It worked much better as a linear journey on the album.
But I say it's emotional roller coaster to listen to it back and to be reminded of the images that we get to see in the documentary. Because yes, there are some images that we know. There's fantastic montages from the Superman movies and Christopher's life, but combining that music with footage from the accident and the home video footage as well was just so beautifully, beautifully done. Did you get to receive any feedback from the Reeve family about the music?
Yeah, well, actually, this was when you talked at the beginning about the responsibility of it. You know, there is the heritage of Superman and all of that, but I kind of put that to one side, because I wasn't trying to write a Superman theme. I wasn't trying to write something heroic. I mean, it turns out that lots of the fans out there are saying, you know, this would be a great Superman theme, and making all kinds of suggestions about that, which I would be wonderful. But that was not at all the intention. The intention was to write something that captured something of Christopher Reeve, and to express, for me, the film is almost really more about the children, and to try and express their emotional states as they tell their story. And trying to represent that in an honest way was by far the most challenging and most worrying thing. Am I doing them justice? Am I, you know, and the score is quite big. It's unusual for a documentary to have a score that is on this scale, that is as epic as this. But I was a little worried about it. And anyway, I did get to meet them at the New York premiere, and I had to ask, I had to say, you know, I hope that my music somehow, on some level, captured sincerely some of how you felt or are feeling. And they all said yes. Maybe they were just being polite. They're very nice people. But they all said that you know, it had done that. So in many ways, that's the biggest compliment I could get.
Yeah, I mean, to hand over one's private home videos to Ian and Peter. Now, they're two very talented and wonderful people. You would trust them with so much, but for those family videos, they created something truly beautiful. And then combine that with your music. That's what got the eyes watery and those hankies at the ready for when people were watching this film. And it's a film that's definitely going to stay with me for many, many years to come, as is the soundtrack. And the final track, one that I was listening to this morning, Super Slash Hero. I'd like to know a little bit sort of behind the scenes, because this is the one with there's lots of vocal instruments on this one. This is the powerful, powerful track. How did that get made?
Well, we tried various things in the temp music there. What we talked at great length about this scene, and what I thought was that It's different from every other bit of music in the film. There's no vocal in any other part of the film. And I think the moment that that Christopher died, you know, everything it, it it's you know, everything changes in that moment. But also I wanted to try and capture this sense of, you know, when something really huge and tragic happens in your life, you know, things, it feels like your world freezes and the rest of the world sort of carries on around you, but you're sort of stuck in this moment. And I thought that the solo vocal could do that, but I also thought that there was something sort of, you know, pseudo-religious about it, you know, you know, about singing and the soul and humanity. And so bringing all of that stuff together in that moment, I think really helps to make that moment stand out. And then I was really lucky. I have a friend of mine called Daisy Shute, who's a brilliant artist, and she's constantly on tour. But she had a moment, and I was really glad. She was the perfect voice for it. And I actually got her to do a couple of unusual things. It's not just a straightforward vocal, but that made it gave it this sort of otherworldly sound. And anyway, very lucky to have her performing on the score.
Yes, because I mean, it's almost there's hints of sci-fi there to it. There's that almost alien outer world tone. There's also remnants of the scene in Gladiator where I see the hand going through the wheat field. But it's again, that's the spiritual element of it as well. And it's a powerful track. The whole, as I said, the whole score is it's one that I could easily put on whilst trying to work in the background, but I find myself stopping to just sort of a appreciate what you created with all the work there for it. What's it like for you being part of Superman's legacy?
Again, I didn't think about this. It's a great question. I didn't think about this going into it. You know, I was really just focused. For me, I was focused on this is a family story about Christopher Reeve and his family. It came really as quite a surprise to me that there would be this comic book DC universe fan response to it, and it's wonderful, it's amazing, and the fans are incredible, but I just was not expecting that. And so when you asked that question, I hadn't really considered that, to think of myself as part of the DC universe. And actually, you know, the little boy inside me is jumping for joy because, of course, you know, I'm like I said, I'm an 80s kid. I collected all the comics. I mean, God knows I should have kept them. They'd probably be worth something now.
Oh.
But you know, I was a huge fan and am a huge fan still. So for you to say that is, I feel very humbled. It's brilliant. I'm really glad and honored if people see it in that way.
And it is it's always a good time to be a Superman fan, but right now, as a culture, as it were, we are eating well. There's fantastic TV shows and comics and documentaries. There's this passion for Superman for the world is getting that is wonderful. And next year we will have James Gunn's Superman movie as well. But I love the fact that the DC Studios, we saw that logo for the first time for this documentary. It feels like we're stepping into this new era of DC and Superman recognition. John Murphy is creating the score for James Gunn's Superman. We don't know if it's finished yet or halfway through or even if we get a slight tease of what that may sound like. From one composer to another, what advice have you got for Mr. Murphy?
Oh, I don't think I could give John any advice. I mean, you know, I've John and I go a long way back, and we composed Kick-Ass together, and I have a lot of love for John. I think he could give me more advice than I could give him. But you know, I actually think we probably have very different styles, and I think what he does is I mean, it's just inventive and uncompromising and just so him. And I really admire that. And I just think he's a great person for that job. He's going to bring something really special to it. And also, I'm just really pleased for him because he's a really great human being. He's really one of the good guys.
There we go. Fantastic answer. You sneaked out of that one very well. That was it. There was no pressure there. But no, it's fantastic. And yes, when his score does get released, I'd be very keen to hear your interpretation and your variant version of that as well. I've taken up enough of your valuable time today. Thank you so much. What is next for you, as it were? What can you tell us about?
Well, I recently finished a second series of SAS Rogue Heroes, which was a hit TV show about a year and a half ago on the BBC. It tells the true story of how the SAS was formed in World War II. And this second series continues that story. It's about the when the SAS went to Europe. They started off in North Africa, and it's a really powerful story. It's actually this series, I think, is perhaps better even than the first series. It's a little more emotional and powerful. And these stories always really resonate with me. You know, there's an important female member of the French Resistance in the story, and my grandmother was in the French Resistance.
Wow.
And so these stories are very personal to me, and I really put a lot of love and effort into it. And so yeah, what go I'm not 100% sure when that's coming out, but definitely go watch that when it does. It's a great bit of filmmaking.
I look forward to that. Thank you so much for your time today. I will leave links in this podcast and YouTube video to where everybody can find you online to find out what you are doing next. My last question of this wonderful podcast is one that I love to ask everybody. But for you, I'm interested to find out the question. And that is, what does Superman mean to you, sir?
Superman it's about my childhood. It was the first superhero that I was ever aware of. And so Superman is a source of inspiration. It's a source of, you know, what is Superman? He's you know, he's overwhelmingly good and you know, and I mean that's a sort of very general term, but I think especially for kids, it inspires you to be a better human being, and I think that is, you know, what it was for me on some level as a kid growing up.
There's no wrong answer to that question, but that was another one that is perfect and will be added to my big book of quotes one day. Elon, thank you so much for your time today. Have a wonderful rest of the day. I can't wait to see and hear what you do next, sir.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me on the show.